got from President Joel at a YU champion gate at the Center for Jewish Rabbi Brander's retreat. So I asked him for a pin to put on my bekesha. I was on the panel during Shal Shudas about 4 or 5 years ago. So he told me he'll take my shtreimel and put it on for a few minutes if in exchange for a pin. So we couldn't take pictures. It would have been a good one. We sat next to each other for a while, but I had the pin and I forgot to bring it. So I apologize to President Joel. It's really a pleasure to be here. And we're here to talk about Gemara and how to, you know, I'd like to think of it as an optimistic, bracingly honest look at inspiring our children to teach Gemara, to acquire Gemara skills, and to really develop a lifelong love for learning. So I'm going to start with a story, and then I'm going to go through five topics, so to speak, and I really would like to hear what you have to say. So I'm really going to try to finish as early as possible so that we can have at least 10 to 20 minutes to answer your questions, and I don't duck from any hard questions, so feel free to ask whatever's on your mind. We're going to be talking about an honest assessment. I mean, we're really looking at it honestly, like, about how's Gemara learning going so far with our kids, what should we be doing about it. I want to talk about making logical decisions, that whatever decisions we do make should be logical, not emotional. Exactly the opposite of what Rabbi Zaks just spoke about. He spoke about inspiring our children emotionally. I'd like to suggest that when we make emotional decisions, sometimes they may not be the best ones. I'm going to be speaking about preparing children, giving them the skills, and slowing down, for God's sakes, to slow down and give the children the opportunity to acquire Gemara skills before covering ground. I'm going to talk about relevancy, how to make this document that was written a very, very long time ago really relevant to today's children. I believe that it's doable. I think it takes a lot of creativity. And I think it is absolutely critical. It's almost a game changer. It's almost a deal breaker if we don't do it. And I'm going to talk about technology, how to integrate technology into all of this. Just by way of introduction, I'm 57 years old. I live in Muncie. I was an 8th grade Rebbe for 15 years. I volunteered to teach the weakest track in the school from 1982 till 1996. And during that time, basically, I had the kids who didn't get Gemara. And my experiences there led me to a number of conclusions, and a lot of the driving force behind the creation of this Gemara book was from my experiences having these kids come up through the grades and not really have ever been taught. I used to say they're not learning disabled, they're curriculum challenged. They were never taught how to learn Gemara well enough before they started. And 20 years ago, I started a yeshiva called Yeshiva Darchei Noam in Muncie, New York. My star Talmud here. Actually went through the system. This isn't a plant. But if you want to feel free to share your thoughts about it, one way or the other, I'm absolutely delighted to hear them later. And I was very determined when we started the school to create the environment where children would be taught skills. I did not have the courage to do what I really would have loved to do in terms of when to start Gemara and how much of it to learn. I'll discuss that. I'll be glad to take questions. It's a very practical issue because you got to get the kids into high school. Okay, so it's very complicated. It's not simple, but I'm going to talk about it. Okay, so let me start with the story. There's a beautiful organization called Sister to Sister. They actually had the Shabbaton this weekend. Sister to Sister. They support young ladies who are divorcees, who are divorced. And they have 600 members. They had 600 members a few years ago when I was at their retreat. I'm a little bit of a softie for these subjects. My mother and my father died when I was a kid. My mother was a single mother for 2.5 years. So whenever, you know, I try to volunteer whenever I can for organizations like that. Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining. And they have a retreat where they have presenters and a lot of, you know, divorcees. So there were 300 people at the session, and there were, again, the session was a sister-to-sister session for divorced women. And they asked me what I wanted to present about, so the other four presenters were all mental health professionals. I was the only educator, so I said, you know what, let me think about educational topics. What could the other four will do a great job on mental health issues. Let me think about something that I could add to it. So I decided to teach them, all these mothers, how to learn Gemara with their kids. I figured it's a nice way to get put in cheirim, you know, kind of excommunicated. Nothing worked till now, so I'm trying. So the women there were literally from absolutely barely religious to very Hasidic women from Williamsburg and Kiryas Yoel, Monroe. I mean, really total range. I prepared 30 handouts. I figured how many people are really going to be interested in, you know, 150 women came. And question and answer went for over 2.5 hours. And I started with, in education, there's a term called anticipatory set, which you frame a lesson by giving an introduction that's relevant or that somehow worked, which is really what I'm doing now. So I decided to do something there. How am I going to start this topic about learning Gemara? So I told the women, I said, ladies, here's your challenge. I'd like you to come up with a Gemara word or terminology that you've heard at least 50 times and you have absolutely no idea what it means. And I said, everybody listening, if you also heard it 50 times and don't know what it means, raise your hand also so we'll kind of get a gauge for what was going on. Folks, it was hysterical. What's Mamanashach? What does Grada mean? What does Kal V'chomer? From basic questions to virtually, anytime anybody said something, everybody's hand went up and they all started laughing. It was really hysterical. I don't know what they're talking about, you know, right? Now, by the way, imagine you're a single mother, you got a seventh grade kid. Not only can't you do homework with him, you don't even know what he's talking about. You don't even know what his life is about, right? They come home and you say, how was your day, sweetheart? And he says, So I said, I'll teach you. It'll take 1 hour. You'll be able to open an art scroll tomorrow and do it on your own. Anyway, so this Hasidic woman, I spoke to her later, actually came from Monroe. She raised her hand and she says, Zug mir Rabbi Horowitz, you know, please tell me, Rabbi Horowitz, Wus is a so interessant wegen an ox? What's so interesting about an ox? She says, what's so in Yiddish? Wus is a so interessant wegen an ox? What's so interesting about an ox? My son picks up the phone. And he's learning, and he talks, ox, 45 minutes, and ox did this, the ox did this, the ox did that, the ox did that. Once he's seen one, you've seen them all. What's the same? She said, this is so interesting. And I rarely lose control of a crowd when I'm speaking. It's happened. Pandemonium. I literally sat down, because like I was just hopeless. Everybody was howling. They did the equivalent of guys high-fiving each other. They were just laughing. Yeah, my son does the same thing. And then they started coming with other things. I said, okay, ladies, can I get back to the subject? Anyway, so I told this woman, I said, you know what they're talking about? Let me explain it to you. Here's the story. I said, imagine you go shopping. You go to your shopping, you're going to a shopping center in Kiryas Yoel, Monroe, and I'm driving in the parking lot, you let go of your wagon, and it rolls down the hill and breaks the headlight of my car. Are you responsible? You didn't do it, you just let go. If it's a windy day, would you be more likely to be responsible or less? You could say it's not my fault, the wind just took it away, or you were negligent because you knew it was a windy day, you should have been much more careful. How about if the wagon tips over and a crate of eggs falls out and I slip on that? So that's like a second or a third degree of damage, right? You didn't even have anything to do with it, right? Did you find that interesting? Would you like to hear a class on this subject? She says, fascinating. Please give it, by all means. So I said, that's what they're talking about. I said, they didn't have shopping carts, and they didn't have cars, and they didn't have taxi drivers. People tied their horse to the thing, so the horses naturally, you know, mixed it up. So the question would be, who was responsible? So she was quiet for a few minutes, and then it was uncanny. She said, I said, not going to get back to my subject. So she said, suddenly Rabbi Horowitz, when man zin's Rebbe learned with the kinder, when my son's Rebbe learns with the children, read their oxen or the shopping cart? What does he talk about? He said, er macht das interessant for the kinder? Does he make it interesting for the children by talking about shopping carts? Or does all he talk about is just oxen, which is not relevant to him and way over you? Well, we're all smiling, right? Almost, what that? How would you describe your smile? Wistful, right? What would you want to say? Go ahead.
No, that's great.
Wistful the way?
Yeah.
Tell me what you're thinking.
Relevant.
Why can't they make it relevant, right?
Yeah.
It's so easy. Yeah. It's so simple to take an abstract concept that is totally not relevant to their lives, and it's so easy to just bring it home, exactly.
But it's, so it's not done.
I didn't say it's not done. I said I don't know. What I said is, what I told the woman is, I wish that your son's Rebbe, I would hope that he's doing it. It's possible that he's not. Maybe even probable that he's not. Although, for those of us who attended school a while ago, today's teachers and Rebbeim and Moras are like a totally different kettle of fish than when we went to school. They get it. They're with it. They go to classes. It's really, thank God, a very different experience for today's kids. My Rebbeim didn't do timeouts. What should I tell you? Well, we misbehaved. We weren't like positionally challenged. But I said it's very possible that he didn't. So I said, here's your opportunity. Imagine if you could talk shopping carts with him when he comes home after an oxen day. And why don't you tell him during dinner time or after dinner, and after he does the X's and O's with his chavrusa, with his study partner, why don't you sit down and tell me what you learned, and let's see if we could find practical examples. I guarantee you he will do this with you every single night. And he'll be the best prepared in the class tomorrow because he's coming in about something that's relevant. So it really kind of encapsulates so much of what I'd like to speak about. Relevance, getting it, preparing children. Excuse me. You know, what to do when they're not making it. How many kids, what percentage of children aren't getting it. You know, we all know the good news. Walk into YU's Beit Medrash here. I actually was there a few times. A few years ago, I had occasion to Rabbi Ries, Shlita, it's a good friend of mine, who's the dean at the time. I could tell you the honest truth, and I wasn't asked to say this. I walked the length and width of the Beit Medrash with him. I'm an outsider. Not one young man looked up, and there were hundreds in the Beit Medrash. I was so impressed. I can't even begin to tell you. Nobody even looked out of the Gemaras. It was extraordinary. I'm saying you go into a Beit Medrash, you go at night to a daf share, and people exhausted after a day's work, or 5:30 in the morning, or, you know, go to Mir Yeshiva in Yerushalayim. I was at the Yarchik Hala now. They have a Mir Yeshiva runs, you know, a few days of intense learning for business people, for people who are here in America. It's so inspiring. I was walking back from the Kotel just 2 weeks ago, and a rabbi from Bayswater, New York, was there with 15 fellows from his shul that came for 4 days. They invited me to hot chocolate. It was great. We had a great time. But it was really inspiring. I mean, these folks were just shut it down. And so we know the good news. But, like, what's the rest of it like? I believe that we're losing a large percentage of our children almost at the get-go when they start Gemara, because a lot of them really aren't getting it. In fact, it was fascinating. The folks there at the Yarchik Hala were in their 30s. I knew a few of them growing up. And trust me when I say two of them in particular, I know the families well. And one of them, the father actually came begging me to help him get his kid to learn Gemara because he was totally disinterested in school. That means we lost him in school. Somehow, after he got married, or maybe in Israel later, you know, in his gap year, he got turned on. So, an honest assessment, I've asked school heads off the cuff. It's much, much healthier to ask high school principals rather than ask elementary school principals, but I asked quite a few high school principals, tell me, of the boys that come to you for interviews, what percentage would you say, like, absolutely do not get Gemara? Like, they absolutely don't get it. Anybody want to guess?
50.
The lowest number was? A third. The lowest number was a third. Most of them said between a third and 50%. That they're struggling, they don't get it, it's hard for them, they hate it. And it's really, that's terrible. what I'm here to talk about is not to kvetch. I want to talk about what we can do to improve it. You're here because you care, right? You didn't slosh through, park your car and walk in the slush because you don't care. You're here because you care. Hopefully you go back to your communities and make a difference with your children, with your grandchildren. So that's what this is about. Think about it a different way. Art Scroll, I love Art Scroll. I published my books with them. They did our safety book. It's fine. I love Art Scroll. I love Rabbi Zlatowitz, Rabbi Sherman. The fact that a guy who learned from yeshiva for 12 years needs an Art Scroll Gemara to get through Gemara is tragic. It's tragic. Think about it. Think of it in a different discipline. Imagine if you went to a guy or gal who went to college and studied the classics in Latin for 10 years. And you said, you know something, I actually saw this passage in Latin. Google Translate doesn't do a good word. Can you help me out? I don't know. I need a dictionary. I don't know it myself. Could you imagine like how bizarre that would be? So we have kids that are going to the Gemara and they can repeat the greatest arguments and the greatest discussions of our commentaries and Mefarshim with ease and comfort, but they can't decode text. It's a tragedy, and that means that they don't own it. They never own it. It's not yours. If you need a teaching aid at the age of 30, it's not your Gemara. You're learning it because it's an emotional connection that you want. We know we're supposed to love it, and we're supposed to be doing it, but it's a tragedy. That's what I think we need to work on. And one last one, the Gemara book we have here, we published it in e-book form with interactive pages so the kids can do homework and send it off to the study partner, to a parent who's on an airplane, or to a tutor. It's available on e-books. So my wife and I were walking the track in the gym two weeks ago, and this fellow comes up to me. I didn't recognize him. He says, "Hi, are you Yaakov Horowitz?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "You guy made that Gemara?" So he said, "Yeah." So he takes his phone. He downloaded it on his iPhone. He said, I'm up to lesson 6. So he says, this is a quote, "I'm 32 years old. I went to yeshiva all my life. My son's about to start Gemara next year," and I can't repeat exactly what he said about how frightened he was, but he used some terminology to let me know how scared he was. He said, I told my wife, I have no idea what to do. I don't know anything. And he said, I went to yeshiva and I did like kind of okay, but how am I supposed to help him? I'm embarrassed. So he said, somebody showed me a thing. So he's walking around the track doing the Gemara, a yeshiva student whose parents paid $100,000 in tuition. So let's talk about logical decisions. And I said, I really want to keep it upbeat. I mentioned what Rabbi Zach said about using emotion, about teaching with emotion. I could not agree with him more. In fact, if I can add one thought to what he said, one of the 10 points that Rabbi Zach said was that we should be engaging their hearts, not just their minds. At an Agudas Yisrael convention, a number of years ago, a very distinguished Rosh Yeshiva came to me and was bitterly complaining that a very large percentage of his students were listening to music, pop culture music, as opposed to Jewish music, or in addition to Jewish music. And it broke his heart. He said, these are great kids. They're learning. They have a geschmack in learning. What are they listening for that stuff? So I asked him, I said, Rosh Yeshiva, do you make a kumzitz with your boys? Do you sit down and sing with them? Are you competing for their hearts at all? So how could you complain? I said, if a guy has a car dealership and he doesn't sell trucks, he can't fetch that people are buying trucks elsewhere. I said, you're not selling this. You got to sell the emotion part. So I agree with him 100%, but not in decision making. We love Gemara so much that I believe that we introduce it too early and push too much of it in greater quantities in terms of time because we love it, because we're making an emotional decision that I don't think is wise. I think we should be rethinking it. Stripped away of all emotion, Gemara, which a non-Jewish friend of mine who follows me on Facebook, I released the Gemara book. He emails me, he says, "Hey Rabbi, what's this Gemara thing all about?" I said, "Gemara is tort law in Latin with no punctuation and the page is slightly out of order." How's that, folks? Yeah? Does that make sense? That's really what it is. Honestly, to 11-year-olds. Okay? That's really what it is. Take away all the emotion. Take away Geschmack and learning and Kedusha, all of it, which I'm all in favor of. That's what it is. In educational terms, that's what it is. It's a complicated text in a foreign language. If you went to a college and you said, I'd like to study the classics in Greek or whatever, you wouldn't even touch the text for 2 years. They tell you to study history, to study the language. In our case of Gemara, they would tell you to take a mathematical logic course and deductive reasoning. They wouldn't even let you touch a Gemara. This program that we made is a 5-month course to do some of it at least. So strictly devoid of emotion, I respectfully suggest that we really rethink this. Yes?
I went to yeshiva for many years. I used to never use art school Gemara. The thing is, besides all of these issues about the Gemara, there's another issue that Gemara is written very concisely. So every few words of the Gemara...
There's a backstory.
And the Mefarshim, the commentaries themselves have many ways of explaining it.
Excellent. That's a very good point. The Gemara is written in very... concise term. There's a lot of backs. If you look at the art scroll Gemara, one of the brilliant things that they did is they give you the backstory while they're learning. Can I finish? It's an excellent comment. Let me just finish because I really want to open it to everyone. It's an excellent point. In another complication, another complexity. Let me tell you something else. I went to Yeshiva Tor Vadas. It was a mainstream yeshiva. I'm not proud. I wasn't much of a student. I really started learning at the end of high school. But I went 10 to Torah V'das all the years. In 12th grade, we learned Gemara. Nobody would believe it. 2 hours a day. Period. Exclamation point. Full stop. We learned Gemara from 9 to 11 in a mainstream... it was 1976. Abe Lincoln, there was a president. it's a while ago. It's a while ago, 40 years ago. But that was the mainstream stuff. And Rabbi Ephraim Waxman, I can tell you, quote you, chapter and verse Rosh Yeshivas, all went to that same Rabbi Yisrael Reisman. He happened to have been a big brother chavrus of mine. He had Rachmanis, I was running around outside. He learned with me for 2 years. But the way it worked was, you got dismissed at 6 o'clock, and the learners went to the Beis Medrash, and they learned all night, because they wanted to. And those who didn't got tutored, you know? So I'm saying, like, it wasn't always like this. It wasn't always like this that kids learned Gemara at young age an extraordinary percentage of their day. This is a really relatively new development, and it's been accelerating, and I've been writing about it for 15 years. If you're interested, you can look up It Doesn't Start in 10th Grade or Training Wheels. Those are two articles I wrote in Mishpacha Magazine 10 years ago about this. I had one final line. I couldn't resist it. The better side of me tried to take this out 3 times, but I had to just leave it in. When the week we released our Gemara book, a fellow comes to me. He's a principal of a school, and my opinions on the need to delay learning Gemara and learns more slowly have been very public. I've never been shy about what I have to say. And so this guy comes up to me. He says that he has a yeshiva, whatever, in a certain town. He said, and Baruch Hashem was starting Gemara in 3rd grade. So I thought he was joking. So I slapped him on the back. I said, 3rd grade. He said, no, I'm serious. I looked at him. He was serious. So may Hashem forgive me. I said, why don't you print up flashcards so the kids in the crib can, like, you know, you can start. The guy means well. He says, well, he doesn't really learn in 3rd grade. He starts in the 3rd grade. So like this. Minute they come into 4th grade, they're ready to go. Let's get going. Let's talk about preparing properly, and I'm going to get practical now. Dr. Heschel Fried, who lectures in Stern College, who's just a breathtaking educator. Anybody had the pleasure of attending his classes? How do you like him? He's amazing. He's just an amazing person. He gave us an assignment that all of you parents and educators and those who care, all of you, of course, I want you to think about this in terms of this Gemara or anything. We were Torah Masorah got a grant from the Mandel Institute, and they trained 18 principals for 3 full years. There were 3 weeks for 3 summers. It was an amazing program. It changed my life. 1997 through 1999, just when I was starting the school. And Dr. Fried came to us. So again, there were 18 principals. We were in Jerusalem, so it was in the morning. America was sleeping. So they were able to get us for 7 hours uninterrupted, which was their plan. And he handed out sheets with the first three verses in Parashas Vayeshev, the first three psukim. Vayeshev Yaakov, Yaakov lived in the land of his, right, this week's Parashah, right? Yaakov lived in the land of his fathers. This is it's the beginning of the story of the sale of Yosef. Okay, this is the story of Yosef. He was a shepherd, and he was playing around with the children of Bilhah and Zilpah, and he brought the Lashon Hara, the bad stuff, their misdeeds he brought to their parents, and Yisrael loved him more than the other children, and he made this robe for him. That's it. So he told us like this, and it really, honestly, it changed the way I taught forever. So he said, I want you to prepare now. Here's the deal. You're lecturing to a class, you're teaching these three verses, and you're not giving them another, only teaching them text, no background. What do they need to know? What are the assumptions that you're making that they know about these three verses that would be able to help them get through this parasha? In other words, what do they know? What are the list of, what do you say, backstory that you need to get this? So again, 18 of us in groups of three, 45 minutes. So we all told them, you know, four wives and this, they were playing. None of us wrote that Yisrael was a name that's interchangeable with Yaakov. And the story makes no sense if you don't know that. The story makes absolutely no sense. So Yosef brought him, Yisrael made this beautiful garment for Yosef. Who cares what Yisrael did? It makes absolutely no sense. If you have a shy kid who's embarrassed to raise his hand, his or her hand, that's it. It's gone. Like, it just makes no sense. So you never make any assumptions. You start teaching a child, teach them everything they need to know. And that was the basis. It really, really changed the way I thought about teaching. So think about the background. Think of what children need to know. Another experience was about this issue of teaching my eighth graders. My eighth grade students that I taught, as I said, it was a weaker track most of the years. So one of the years really struck in my mind. I was teaching the first day of school, and I never was into these rule business. Here are the school rules. If a kid comes home the first day, you learn a lot of rules. I used to say, open your gemaras. I don't know anything about you. You can ask anything you want this year. I'll never embarrass you for any question. I didn't do any background checks on you. I have no idea who you are. Let's go. So my first day I was in Gemara Shir, and I promise you, just like this, a child raised his hand. He says, hey, Rebbe, you look like a really nice guy. It was just like this. He said, we're nice kids here, but this is the base class. He said, this is the base class. We're dummies. None of us know how to learn here. What are you getting all worked up about the Gemara? Just across the hall there, maybe you go to give a class there. He says, no, we're not going to bother you. We're not troublemakers. You can have a great year, Rebbe. We'll have a great time. But don't get so worked up about the Gemara because no one's listening. And I said, close your Gemaras, guys. How many of you believe that? Every hand went up. And I said, why do you feel this way? And the kids all said, I've been tutored for, it was heartbreaking. I wrote an article, it was 1995, I wrote an article called An Ounce of Prevention, and then the Jewish Observer, that got me into trouble. I had a very quiet life until then. We got over 100 letters to our home from that. That's what got me into this whole thing of teens at risk. And they all believed it. So I decided that what I was going to do was, I made a two-week spring training for them, where I taught them Hebrew and Aramaic. I had done it in previous years, but not that pronounced. I said, guys, close your gemaras, close your chumashim. You're not going to like this. It's not a lot of fun. But I'm going to teach you. We're going to do spring training. And this is what I think we should do way back at the beginning. I said, we're going to do spring training. Here's what it is. They do calisthenics before they start baseball. Nobody likes it. It's not fun. You're not playing. They want to play ball. But you have to do these exercises. So I said, here's the deal. I promise you all that if you come to me midwinter break and you say, Rebbe, this was a waste of time. I tried as hard as I could. I don't know why you did this. It didn't help me at all. I promise you I'll give you two additional weeks to your midwinter break. I'll give you the 2 weeks back. You have to try as hard as you can and tell me you don't know why we did it. And, you know, over the years I had done more or less this type of, it just changed the way the kids started to learn. We taught them structure, I mean, everything that we should teach them at the beginning. I think this is what we need to do. We need to teach our children these skills at the beginning. I think we need to slow down. What are we rushing to? What's the rush? Why shouldn't we introduce Gemara slowly? We should learn every Rashi that has Gemara-type discussions. before we start Gemara. We should learn a whole huge amount of Mishnah under their belt before they start. Why are we, what's the rush? Where are we rushing to? And I'm telling you, it's not schools, folks. I know, it's more, I'm telling you, it's more parents. It's more parents than schools, because when the schools do the right things, typically they'll label the weak school. I'll take that during Q&A, which I'm going to finish my presentation hopefully within 5 minutes. It's complex. It really is complicated. It's not simple, because typically we're good, we love our children and we want them to be scholarly. We want them to learn well. But I really think that we need to be creative and have creative scheduling so that children who love Gemara are able to move ahead. One of the things that I never got to do in my home school, some of the more progressive in different subjects, let's say they have, let's say, math classes that are ungraded. I always wanted to do it. I never fulfilled one of the things I wanted. That you go to a lot of colleges, high schools, you have math classes. So there's 5 math classes, and you can stay at level A for 4 years, or you could stay at level C for many years until you get your legs and move up. You know, there's ways that we could do this where the bright kids can move ahead. There's a personality profile. If you took every kid at a local high school here and made them all accountants or all artists, you'd have some really unhappy kids. You'd have a lot of at-risk accountants. You know, some people just aren't good with numbers. 101 on personality profiles is that some kids are not going to be good at this logic. So how do we get shopping carts? 2 final things, shopping carts and technology. So I think we need to be creative. One of the topics that I taught in yeshiva many of the years I was an 8th grade rabbi was a Gemara in Makos of Ilan Basar Nof. It talks about the Ir Mikla, the city of refuge where someone killed by accident went to. It had 2,000 amos around it, 2,000 cubits, about, you know, whatever, 2/3 of a mile. And the Gemara gets very, very granular and talks about a tree at the edge of the Ir Miklat, at the edge of the boundary, that the trunk of the tree was inside the boundary, and it was leaning, and the branches are on the other side. So there's a count. Can you imagine the eyes of my students who hated Gemara in the first place? I would start teaching this Gemara. Oh, my God. Did this ever happen, Rabbi? You know, so the guy's leaning. This is the Gemara. It's extremely complicated. They have to learn it for 2 weeks. So the tree is over here, the trunk's on the other side. How about the trunk's on the outside and the inside? What if a guy goes back and forth? I can't begin to tell you how the eyes used to roll. So I would compare it to basketball or football. Okay, if you catch, let's say a punt goes into the end zone, you can jump into the end zone and throw it back, and it's counted as if where your legs left. I found an article in the New York Times. I used to, you know, my brain is, whatever, runs around sometimes. So I grant you, you know, not everybody, whatever, that's what made it hard for me to be a student in school. But when I found things that were relevant to this, my Gemara learning, I always snapped it up. This was before Al Gore invented the internet. You can look it up now. There's a road called County Line Road, a State Line Road. You can look it up now. New York Times, County Line Road. That the road, there's a whole Shulchan Aruch on how it got that way. It's a road between 2 states. One side that crosses through, people cross the street, you go an hour ahead. And they pay taxes, they go to different school districts, and some of it cuts through bedrooms. The state, look it up online. Every day I started the Gemara, I would introduce for a minute or two. I'd say, hey guys, look at this article I just saw. I'd make some copies, send it around. I'd say, isn't this cute? Or do you live on the border between Muncie and Spring Valley? You know what that is when they snow, when they shovel snow? Why are you smiling? Remember, they shove snow. The plows from Muncie, from Ramapo, they shove the snow on the other side when they hit the line and back up. You know, so you introduce it. Now it becomes relevant. So you live there? You live on Brockton, 27, right? I used to memorize my students' addresses. 27 Brockton, right? I can't remember. Toysfus. All of a sudden, it becomes relevant. That's it. What happens if you catch a football and you're leaning over and you put your both feet in? What, do you have possession? Did you not? It's exactly what we're talking about in the Gemara. So just by making things relevant, by introducing graphics, by introducing concepts and ideas, it's so easy to do. All you need to do is you know, get a creative person in the school to put these together. My dream is to make a teacher's edition for this. If you look at a secular book, you look at a regular reader. They have teacher's editions and lessons and ideas. It breaks my heart when I look at it. Our kids, what's the Gemara? A Gemara. You know, and the secular world, a teacher doesn't, I'm not going to say nothing enough to know anything, God forbid. It's so much easier to be a teacher when you have all these resource materials. You know, so I'm just going to show you just a few things that we did here. If you have a look at those Gemara books, I went around. I'm just going to show you a few simple ideas. Just look at page 19 and 20 in the green pages. Just have a look just for a moment, okay? Pages 19 and 20, there's a few extra, please pass them back. In the green, you see those? It's just a page of Gemara. That's all it is. It's how to help kids walk through a page of Gemara. Seems pretty simple, but if you don't know what a daf means, what a blot is, how the page numbers work, they don't work like American books do. It's another barrier. It's another thing you need to teach children beforehand. If you'd be kind enough, turn ahead two pages to page 24 and look at that absolutely brilliant. I'm going to do something difficult and quiet down for a minute. Look at the paragraph on top. David asked his brother Chaim. Have a look at that, please. Page 24 of the green pages. The green pages are at the beginning. So my Rebbe, Rabbi Spivak, had this brilliant way of introducing Gemara logic to the kids. Do you know what mommy's making for supper? Answer, we're having hamburgers. Proof, I saw mommy take out ground beef. Akasha, question on that. But maybe we're having meatballs. I saw mom have hamburger buns. So Rebbe just took those five abstract concepts and just made them practical. It's the difference sometimes between kids getting it and not getting it. On the blue pages, it starts from one again. If you look at page 16, there's a graphic here of the machlokas, the argument about how when you say Kriya Shema, when you start saying Kriya Shema, it's in the blue pages, it's page 16. There's a simple graphic here. I did some very informal studies, so to speak, or with the students, dividing up a group and teaching half of them with and half without. They weren't even in the same zip code afterwards. Just simply having you ever wonder, we're all adults. You watch the news and they do the weather. Why do they tell you Newburgh, New York, at 4 degrees if it says it? You ever wonder, why do they do that? Newburgh, New York, coming in at 4 degrees. I see. I can read. Hello? Why do they do that? Because they know that some people are visual learners, and some people are auditory learners, and some people are textual learners, and they want you to tune in tomorrow night. So they make, and they have these silly smiley faces, you know, we're having a sleety day, you have this angry face. Why do they do that? Because they want you tuned into them, and they know that depending on your profile, it's like a smorgasbord. That's really what it is. The more types of food you put out, the more likely it is that people are going to enjoy themselves. If you love steak, you can't only serve steak. So if you just a simple idea of teaching, of introducing graphics. On page 43 and 44 in the blue, you could see we did a review of, the last thing was topic by topic. We took the, if you look, notice, I spoke about the weather with the smiley faces and the other ones. We made icons for each type of logic. You see, there's one for Akasha. They're called triggers, and you know, and it triggers so much. It's so helpful in having children follow the bouncing ball during a very complicated piece of Gemara. And if you look at page 47, the children write it again with no aids. They do this on their own to just really get their hands around the bouncing ball of the Shackle Vitaria. If you want to look up something fantastic, there's a fellow in a superstar Rebbe. His name is Rabbi Mordechai Smolarchik. He's a good friend. He actually made our ebook. Look up NLE, Nancy Larry Edward, Resources. He has a whole sugya. He made numerous topics of Gemara on iPads. These are for schools where all the kids, he teaches in Hillel Academy in Boca Raton. I really encourage you to look it up. He takes, for example, the topic of a Ben Sar Amor, of a rebellious child, and brilliantly ties it in to Trayvon Martin and the Stand Your Ground law. Is it ethical to punish somebody for what you think they're going to do?
Could you repeat the...
NLE Resources, Rabbi Smolarchik. You look up Rabbi Mordechai Smolarchik, S-M-O-L-A-R, I believe C-I-K or something like that. So, you know, I think there is so much that we could do. Slow it down. Give the children the skills. Grade them so that the learners can go on and the other kids can get their skills. And technology is a whole different thing. I want to take your question, so I'm going to leave out the technology piece, only to say that if you think your children and grandchildren who are doing this at 2 years old are going to sit there for a 45-minute lesson, look at the board. That dog ain't going to hunt, folks. So we really need to... So listen, people who are successfully protecting the children from the internet, whether they are or not successful, let's assume for a moment that they are completely successful. Tov olam bracha, great. But if you have internet in your homes for other things, why shouldn't we do that? Oops, they told me 10:02. So I'll tell you what, they told me 10:05:02 because we started late. So I'll tell you what I'll do. Anybody wants to go? I'll take questions now if you'd like, and anything. Please feel free to go, Gesund to Hate. If you'd like to, again, the books are $10. If you'd like, you can drop them here. I'll take questions. Go, please.
So what would you say the appropriate age for boys and girls to actually start this journey?
This journey. When should boys start, girls start the journey? I think...
And I use the word journey and not learning tomorrow.
Right, it's a journey. It is a journey. So, look... I think what?
And also he had girls to the mix.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Okay, look, there are many day schools that teach girls. There are some that don't. But I would say 7th, 8th grade, about bar mitzvah time. That's when I would think a proper time. You know, I said...
Start the journey.
If I was the principal, yes. Okay. I say if I was the principal of an orphanage in Hawaii that had its own masifta. Okay, so I had nobody to... I just dealt with the kids, had no community pressure. God forbid, I don't mean that, God forbid. No. You know, I mean in the nicest way. If I was supporting children with challenging lives, and I had my own high school and I could do whatever I want, I would probably start around 13 years old or so. Which, by the way, you look at the morale, you look at the Mishnah. My goodness, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says start at 15. The Mishnah says this. This is not Yankee Horowitz.
You're talking at the level that you're starting writing this book?
They should learn. I think they should know a tremendous... they should be totally fluent in Mishnah. I think there should be a few months of teaching the basic words of Aramaic. If you look at this textbook, I did this because I'm a pragmatic person. I realized that my school included... You know, here's the problem. You could do whatever you want. You have to... It's like an outlet. You know, the prongs are a certain distance apart. You could think that 4 prongs or 8 prongs is a great idea. But if you leave your house... You know, you have to plug it in somewhere. So is it going to happen anytime soon? I don't think so. But I think it certainly should be later than 4th or 5th or 6th grade, in my opinion. I'm sorry?
The high schools
should start with the assumption that the children are beginner Gemara learners. Look, I'll tell you, in my own teaching career, Rabbi, you know, he's an amazing educator. In my own teaching career, when I started teaching, it was 33 years ago, we did not learn Tosfos in elementary school. I taught 8th grade, I know. The kids did not learn any Tosfos. Somebody posted on my Facebook page... I'm sorry?
What's Bikius to what person is
the... Right, I'm just even talking about Tosfos. We did not do Tosfos, we just did mastery of Gemara and Mishnah. Here's another way of looking at it, Rabbi. Here's another way of thinking about it. Any motivated 20-year-old could learn all elementary school curriculum probably in 2 months. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah.
Somebody with the skills and somebody with the desire to learn could knock it all off in 2 months. So what are we rushing? We should teach them how to learn. Why are we starting Tosfos? You know, I think of it this way. Any time you do an improvement, or you crank up the... you're losing a percentage of your children. It's really a logical choice. It's like doing it. You may, imagine if you were a coach and you took your kids on a run. So if you did a slow jog, everybody could go, and maybe you divide it to a couple of groups. If you start running the kids, some kids are going to just drop out. That's what's happening.
Yes. This really does not only apply to Gemara. This the whole teaching process.
I don't disagree.
We need to.
So I think
we need to be progressive enough to say this differential learning.
Right.
Tracking is not a bad word.
Right.
All that stuff. The issue I think you brought out is that schools, as much as you want to blame the schools, we really have to blame the parents, because in today's society, we are pushing the schools
absolutely
to teach too much, too fast. Kindergarten is now the new first grade.
1,000%.
All those.
1,000%. There's Baby Einstein as an example. Remember that Baby Einstein, where they read words to the kids? It turned out to be a spectacular flop. The kids were actually doing worse. So I'm pragmatic. The good news is that an enormous percentage of our classes are doing differentiated instruction and are doing cooperative learning and are trained. And I think in Chumash, it's far better than, in my opinion, than in Gemara. In other words, the quality of instruction, I think many or most schools are doing Chumash the way it should be done. Slowly, teach them Hebrew, the breakdown of Lashon Kodesh. I'll tell you the cutest proof. I made a Chumash book. We made a Chumash book like this. We released it 3 or 4 years ago. So it's really apples and apples. I have this book was released in May. It's in 35 schools already. I was hoping for 5. Schools don't do like impulse purchases, right? So, and it's in Brachos, not in Elul Metzias, which many of the yeshivas start with. Our Chumash book has nowhere near that level of, you know, I got to have one of these. Baruch Hashem, we reprinted it a few times. It's a good book. I'm proud of it. But by and large, there are great programs. I think that today's children are learning Chumash certainly on a level that when I started teaching, I think we should do what we're doing what we're doing in Chumash well, I think we should be doing to Gemara. And there are great Rabbeim who are doing fantastic things in Gemara. It's not, God forbid, to imply that the Rabbeim aren't doing a good job. I think they're doing a great job. I think they're being given a very challenging task of getting 20 children to do what's basically an accelerated track. The whole curriculum of the yeshiva, you know, the people go to Europe and they start looking at Volozhin and Slobodka. They're all shocked at how small the buildings are. You know that? You come... What? It's a good, yeah, I'm saying, if people came to me, they came back, they said, I got the Volozhin and Yeshiva, right? You would think it's, 3 square blocks. It looks like, who went? A tiny percentage. There were poor people, and they all were. You know, the most motivated kids who slept on benches in the women's section of the shul went to learn. So they were self-motivated, brilliant kids. So they did well with this program. So it comes from a good place. But we're not going to get all Volozhin kids like this. Yes.
I wasn't here at the beginning.
Yes.
It's amazing how many things you said. And I've said to people, and I find no one sympathizing with it. I have my own theories on that. I think we start Gemara much too early. The whole sugya of Yishalish Adam Shnosa, that like Mikbro, we should do everything.
Right.
And then Bavli is Mulla Mikulam, you can be able to
right.
The whole thing on Bavli.
Well, thank you.
First of all, it's not meant per se la halacha. Second of all, it's assuming they know
right.
Tanakh first.
That's right.
It's assuming the other things.
Right.
And just
the kids are learning Tanakh through Gemara. You know, because they look up the pages. I'm serious. It's crazy.
You need splinter skills to be able to get
right.
One, get
and,
one
and,
to the other.
Can I tell you something? I have a radical thought. I got your attention. I think that on some level, I spoke to a few Gedolim about this, my theory in this. I really believe this to be true. If you look at Gemara, it's almost like there's a bar to entry. It's like written for a club. I believe that the Chachamim, see, the Gemara is how halacha is generated. Okay? So I think that the Chachamim, on some level, that were well-versed, that discussed the Gemara, didn't want a lay person to have full access to all of this because they would misinterpret, not knowing enough. It's like, you know what it's like? It's like calling, you want to get a tech guy, if you work in a big company and you want to get an IT guy up to your office, trust me, calling somebody and trying to protect you won't work. The best thing you could do, because I did it once, you pick up a phone and you say, listen, Mike, cancel that request. I have the back off the computer. I'll probably have it fixed in 5 minutes. He will be up there before you hang up the phone, because he doesn't want you in the back of the computer. So I think on some level, the assumption was that you were a scholar when you started learning Gemara. Therefore, brachas doesn't start with, here's what a bracha is. It starts with, where do they start? They're making an assumption that you're up to that level.
You let me go. Dumb of the Rambam, he says no one's going to need anything after this.
Right.
And more Mepharshim.
Exactly. On that, then everything. Yes, please. You're next. Go. Please let me go.
One thing over here. I taught Dikduk in the college here.
Yes.
And it was amazing the shilas. It's amazing the shilas I get from people in general, where just the basic things. I did all the Rashi's and the Mishnah Berurah that people skip.
Thank you so much.
But just the basic understanding and just to get a feel for it.
Yep, go ahead, please.
High school level.
Yes.
There's a very big focus on the brisker derech. Are there other drachim, and why aren't they more publicized?
I think we need to go now. His question was what I think about the brisker derech. So I'm going to take a pass on that and leave this for elementary school. I can tell you this, that we got, I don't have the exact numbers, but more than a few dozen requests for this book from high school principals. Could you send me 4? Could you send me 8 for incoming high school seniors? I'm actually working with a few folks here in YU at redoing this to with a little less graphics for adults, for people who are Balei Teshuva. You know, I'm sorry, I'm interrupting myself, but think about this one. If you want another reason why we should slow down, look at people who become religious at 25 or 30. The ones who go to a good Baal Tshuva school, and I ask, people ask which program, I ask the heads of the Baal Tshuva school, what do you do to introduce your students to Gemara? Well, we have an 8-month program, rather than we get them a chavrusa. If they say we get them a chavrusa, I say run for the hills. But the good schools, Aish and Ar Sameach, they have a real program. I got news for you, a year after that, they're flying with the rest of us, maybe better than us, because they were taught. So I'll tell you something. You see this picture? There's a little kid here in the graphics. The original cover had a kid on it. And after it was at the printer, I pulled it back and redid it to take the picture off, because I said there are going to be 8th graders walking around the hallway with this book who are in remedial classes, and I didn't want to embarrass them. And I have a 32-year-old. We have many, many, many adults are getting it. So look, I think there's a lot of hope. I think we just need to do it right. Yes, ma'am. You had a question?
No, I just wanted to ask you if I could send you a check.
Absolutely. There's an address there. Absolutely.
I didn't want to take it. I saw the address.
Thank you very much. Anybody else? One or two more? Go ahead. Go.
Why did you choose in both the book and in the yeshiva to start with brachos instead of starting with Yom Tziyah?
Oh, that is a loaded question. Thank you. Ma'an Talmud. Why do I pick brachos? Many yeshivas, probably most, start with Yom Tziyah. I personally find Eilu Metzius to be very difficult. I think it's Yishalom Midas is an abstract concept, and I think that it also has one subject that goes on, Yishalom Midas goes on for months. So if a kid was out for a few days or didn't get something, brachos, on the other hand, is much more... What?
The Zikin is a little more...
Right. So I'm saying Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva, just for full disclosure. Rav Moshe, and thank you for asking, it was a great question. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he writes that discussing the merits of starting with Eilu Metzius. So I'm just putting it out there that I feel bad. Rav Moshe passed away in 1986. I started teaching in 1982, and I wanted to go and talk to him about it. And Lo Zachisi passed away before I was smart enough to get up there. But I would have loved to discuss it with Rav Moshe. You could interpret his tshuva to explain why people are learning Eilu Metzius rather than they should. But I have to judge what, you know, typically I would say most day schools start with brachos, and most classical chadarim or yeshivas, there are exceptions, start with Eilu Metzius. Most of them start with Eilu Metzius and brachos. Did I answer your question? Okay, and you have a question? Let's go one or two more, and we'll call it a day. You're next, and we'll wrap up. Yes.
So some of the kids I tutor, you know, they understand. You know, they're young. They understand the Sfar of Gemara, but they can barely read Hebrew, and they have trouble reading Hebrew. So what do you recommend schools do in that regard?
Right, so the question was, again, you're tutoring children, they know the logic of the Gemara, they don't can't read it.
They can't follow the rest of the class, they're having, you know,
right.
going on and
right.
on.
Right, right. So one thing, what I found helpful when I taught my track class, what I used to do as a teacher was I used to give different marks. See, some kids, what happens is if a kid's not doing well, maybe you should encourage the schools or teachers of your students, the kids you're tutoring, to do this. In other words, let's say you're horrible at text and you're great at svara, at logic, or you're great, you have a great mind for languages, and the language is a piece of cake, but you can't follow the bouncing ball through the kasha and teretz, question and answer, the shakavatari, the give and take. The problem is when you get your test, it still says 60, but it's not diagnostic, it doesn't help you. It doesn't help the student's parents, it doesn't help you as a tutor, all you see is a lousy mark. So what I used to do is I would give a grade for text, for translating text, I would give a grade for simple questions, and then I would give a grade for the more logical questions. Like this, it was very clear, a kid gets a 20 on the text and 100 on the logic. First of all, it empowers him. He says, him or her says, okay, now I know what I need to work on. So that's just one tool, but I shouldn't say buy the book, but that's really, you know, I'm saying get tools. There are other tools out there. You can go online. There's good stuff out there. But the, you know, I think they need strength training. And to just go further ahead, you know, what I recommend on a practical level is usually, I would say, again, I'm a pragmatic person, I would say an idea would be for the parents to take the child out of summer learning groups. Let's say the kid goes to whatever camp, a summer, a boy, a girl goes to summer camp, and they have a two-hour learning period. Instead of that time, substituted with spring training, with having them literally go, you know, like this, they're not embarrassed, they can stay in their class, and then they have some skills without upending their whatever they're learning in the summer, you know, they could get by without, so to speak. They just need their skills. That's something that I found to be just a practical way to go. I hope that was helpful. I said, I'll take yours privately if you want.
Actually, go. That's exactly what I was going to say. In my experience with my kids and my own, you know, background, is that forget about Gemara, talk about Pashut Ivrit, reading basic. Forget about the Aramaic.
Right.
What about Arashi? Arashi.
Exactly.
They can't read.
Right.
And I'm talking
exactly.
about mainstream. I'm not talking
right.
about
absolutely.
Gemara.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm talking about day school,
the way,
eighth grade. Day
I didn't even
school.
Discuss this. We didn't discuss the whole davening thing. If you were really doing davening rationally, like I said, which I another thing I did not have the courage to do, the real way, educationally sound way to do davening is not let the children daven anything that they don't understand. That's really the way we should do it. It makes no sense. But we don't do that. The problem with that is you wouldn't start davening with them until third grade, and then the kids who go to my school are going to go to shul, and they're going to be their dad, you know, first grader. Oh, I just have to say Shema. We know that. He know every word. Say it beautifully. Everybody else is shuckling and reading. They don't know. So it's really a theme that goes.
When are we going to have a critical mass that is going to acknowledge and say kids can't read in eighth grade?
So,
half the class can't read a Rashi.
So here's what I encourage parents to do.
This is the way it is, and we have to.
Dr. Fried has a diagnostic Kriya test that is fantastic. Dr. Fried has a Kriya test. I think if parents want to help a school, we school principals have a lot on our plates, a lot of on our plate, and a lot of it has nothing to do with education. You know, a lot of it has to do with stuff. The best thing you could do as a parent in a school, if you want to affect change, sit down with the principal, bring a checkbook, and say, I'm not kidding, I would like to help the students get, don't kvetch, just I would love to help the students get some mastery. I was in shul on Shabbos. I heard some of the kids davening. It's painful to listen to them. I know you get it and you love the kids. What can I do to help? I'm willing to put together some money. Maybe we should train the staff. In other words, offer help. I found that I can't imagine a principal that would not seriously take that. I'll take any private questions. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. Thanks, folks.
Is a very good.
Thank you so much. Great to see you. Hatzlach Rabbah.
which is mostly for beauties.
Same thing. Beginning. That's what they're talking to me about.
What I said years ago is that people from, in general, yeshivas should be going there because they don't assume you know anything,
right.
And they cover everything. Very good. I have friends who, he didn't go to yeshiva, and when the kids started going to yeshiva,